Puh, fetter Idee. Moin, Doggy, schau mal, in die kommen. Wir kommen.
Well, a very big welcome to Grow Radio. I'm Frieda Morrison, and you find me in the greenhouse again, because, as you can maybe hear, the rain isn't taking time to come down outside. And I'm dodging all the drips inside for all the slipping glass panes up in the greenhouse. But it's warm in here, amidst the floors, and I must say the tam thooms are looking really bonny. I like the leaves and floors and salads. They're really, really tasty. And the tajadis and the croissants are looking fine the new. But they're working their keep to head off the bugs, especially the green fly. Touch wood, and they green fly in here. Come on, doggies, in you come. Come on. There's a weed outside. Come on. And we've still got lettuce surviving. I have a bumper crop of cucumbers. Bonny looking courgettes coming on. Purple beans through there. That much to my surprise turn green when they're cooked. There was I trying to be creative, planning to have the purple beans side by side with the carrots on the plate. Colour. And they turn green. Fit a swick. But we have a special treat for you in this episode. Oops, dodging the splutters coming down for the reef. We have a special treat for you in this episode, speaking of cooking. We introduce the first of our programme cooks, Helen Fitch from Murrayshire. Helen is just one of the best cooks I've come across. And in this episode, she has beetroot dishes, fig dishes, raspberry vinegar, and an alternative to green tomato chutney. And for fit I've heard, that may come as a blessing to a lot of folk. Apparently, we'll have a lot of green tomatoes this year. But I have to say, my crop are looking really good, despite the wonky weather we've had. But time to join the gang in their virtual sheds. One, doggies, come on. So, come with me, and I'll introduce you to the team. And welcome again to Grow Radio. Come on, doggies. No, come on, let's wait. We'll run. Come on, come on, come on, come on. Ready, go. Go, ooch, quick. Ready. And a big welcome again to our virtual gardening sheds and our real gardeners, who I'll introduce in a minute. And as I said earlier, I'm Frieda Morrison, and I'm still Frieda Morrison. And nothing in this programme is rooted and ready, and we enter the new season with style. Even if you've not got a garden. In fact, a lot of folk that listen to this programme haven't even got a garden. And it doesn't really matter, just bide with us. The programme moves in many dimensions. And say to my companions, the hefty, we've all got smash heads. Let me introduce the team. In Embra, in charge of the techie waves, who's soon after Richie Werner.
Aye, how's it going, Frieda?
Oh, it's going fine. You're back for your holiday?
Back, yeah, I had a couple of days in Loch Lomond, so that was quite amazing. But I think me and half the central belt headed over. I got to swim in the loch, and I'm very happy. So,
good lad. And Christophe and Urhid Gerner, David Mitchell.
Hello there, Frieda, for your sunny Edinburgh.
It's a sunny here as well. At last, sun, no more rain, hopefully for a while. And in Aberdeen, our production manager for Invents Things and sorts out our webs, enter Andrew Davidson.
Aye, Frieda, if it like.
Oh, just no bad. Format of this programme is easy, it has to be, but no quick. Email questions and recorded questions, and Andrew will explain how you record your gardening questions on our Grow Radio website. Andrew, over to you.
Okay, so if you're wanting to record a question for us, all that you have to do is you go to www.growradio.com, and there's a button there just in the front page. You hit that button, you speak a wah, record your question. If you're not happy with it, you can record it again, that's not a problem, and then it gets sent directly to us. Or if you just want to send us an email, the email address is info@growradio.com.
Oh, wow, right. Easy peasy.
Oh, aye.
And, of course, we're part of Scotch Radio. We've just launched a new episode of that. Episode 70. Richie,
episode 70. 70? What a milestone.
70 episodes. Nay, 70 years we've been together, mind, but we've been together 70 episodes.
It must be over 7 years, though, eh?
It's going into 8 years.
Oh,
now.
Wow. Look at that.
So if folk would like to hear, we listen to that. It's on www.scotsradio.com and think you'll enjoy that. Cultural Scotland.
Oh, yeah.
Okay, but in this programme, this very episode, The Secret Lives of Worms, or Wims. And it is fascinating. David will tell you more later. But David, just give us a wee starter. Give us a little known fact about worms.
Well, we all care about these wee wriggly things, but we never stop and think. They've nae bones. They've nae skeleton. They're invertebrates. And it's war as that, you can. They've nae lungs. They breathe through their skin. Queer things.
Oh, wee things, but we'll hear more, eh? And Dave, you're telling us about a book, and it's called The Earth Moved by Amy Stewart, and that's a cracker as well.
I'll give a wee insight into that and a wee other stuff about the wriggly fellas that keep the soil healthy.
Right. And a new season has begun. That of Food for the Garden, the hearst has started. Ray, I've made raspberry jam.
Ooh.
And for the mess I've made in the kitchen as well, for Omidy asks. But just wait till you hear what our cook Helen Fitch has cooked up in her kitchen up in Murrayshire. Oh man, Helen is good. And I mentioned green tomato crumble, raspberry vinegar, fig dishes and beetroot recipes to dress on a plate. Oh, just to whet your appetite. So let's get started with the emails. This is for Alison White in Dunblane. Question, planted a cornus argenta in a corner, a very weak corner. The horizontal branches are getting squashed. Can it be lifted or shifted? David!
Well, it's an awful bonny thing. It's got kind of layered branches. And it'll no like a corner because you'll no see it at its best. It's better in the middle of an open lawn. Depending on how big it is, you should be able to shift it. If it's kind of 5-6 feet high, you might hit to prepare the root ball over 2 seasons. And you do that by digging a wee trench through it and encouraging it to produce fibrous roots. If it's a lot smaller than that, you just wait till all the leaves drop off in the autumn and you can dig it up carefully with a good root ball and shift it sometime between the end of October, November and into about March of next year.
Right, next question. Raised beds, this is Verona and Oban. I want to put raised beds in an area, heavy clay, so I need topsoil. Do I need to dig the soil first? That's the first question. Also, fits the best height for a raised bed and therefore how much topsoil? Whew. David?
Well, it really... Kind of, I think when you build a raised bed, it's very important that it drains into the ground properly underneath it. So it's probably a good idea to build the raised bed and then fork the soil underneath and break it up. And if it is quite heavy and clay, I would maybe put a wee bit gravel or a bit of rubble into it. As regards the height of the bed, well, that really depends on what you want the bed for. If it was somebody in a wheelchair, you would want the bed to be a little bit higher so it was accessible when they were sitting down. If it's just in a garden and you just want to lift it up to get freer draining and make things a bit easier for yourself, you're probably talking somewhere between 30 centimetres, 40 centimetres in height. And it depends what you build it out of as well. If you use sleepers, then one sleeper might be enough. If you use another product, it might be one stacked on top of the other. And as for the amount of topsoil, that depends on the size of the bed. But, you know, it'll take a wheen of barrel loads to fill something like that. Compost doesn't go as far as you think.
No. Okay, good advice. And Dave, if I'm in the soil, give another worm fact.
Another worm fact. You can something, they're blind. They can't see. They've nae eyes and they've nae lugs.
They've nae lugs.
They can't hear, but Richie will understand this.
Aye?
They feel sound through their body.
Oh, so they feel vibrations.
So when wee things are moving, they feel the vibrations. So their whole body's like a big ear.
That's how they can know the blackbird's coming to eat them.
Exactly. That's how they can whether the puddock's coming just to scoff them up and soak them through his thrapple.
Richie?
Aye?
Do you feel sound through your body?
Sometimes.
Do you?
Depends how loud the speakers are. Well, your whole body's an organism for listening, isn't it? So,
I mean, just think about heavy metal, Richie. I mean, that just hits you hard.
How does it hit the worms, though?
Oh, man, they got about 3 feet on a wheel doon. Oh, I'm not listening to that, okay, then. I'm out of here.
We didn't hear.
Now we're listening. We're on to the kind of the zone for we've got worms listening to heavy metal. Okay, we move on quickly. Before Omdi says anything else about worms and heavy metal, right? This is an audio question. Beck and Pete Wasson's Garden. This is Beck with a question.
Hiya, we're just moving to a new house and our garden is a corner, mostly grass, and we're just looking how to establish it, make it sort of child friendly. We like lots of colour, we're thinking maybe some fruit trees or some raised beds.
Anything that really attracts lots of kind of butterflies and bees. So we'd like to maybe build some things into it for the kids. Anything that gives us colour, like for, you know, most of the year would be good.
But we just don't know where to start.
Aye.
Okay, Beck Wasson, here we go. Now, can I make a suggestion? This is a big question. Richie, you're a father of two young
Indeed.
Daughters, very lively daughters.
Aye.
Can we include you in this discussion, please?
I would love that, absolutely.
Let's start with Dave's take on the subject. Dave, over to you.
Well, you kind of, I think in a post-COVID world, Frieda, the demand for family gardens is going to increase, and that's going to infect all sorts of things. But having a garden, you kind of just click your fingers. There's no IKEA for gardens. There's no B&Q. You kind of just go and put it down there instant. There's no instant gardening. It's all about time. And the first step I see it is understanding that it takes time. You need to assess what you've got, what you want, and plan, and then put those thoughts into some sort of order. And, you know, the second step then is really thinking about your family. What do they want? What inspires them? What solutions? How do you make the garden fit for purpose? And you don't want to be too serious about this either, because you want it to be fun. Gardening should be fun. It shouldn't be a hard task. And your garden needs to be adaptable. It needs to be sustainable and all in the longer term. So you don't want to be doing things that are fussy and take a lot of looking after if you ain't got time to do it. And it's a journey for everybody that's involved. That's very important. It's a room outside. It's somewhere to relax. It's somewhere to learn. And it needs to be affordable. You need patience. Mm-hmm. But it'll give you a lot of rewards. And it's that last thing. It's affordability. Mm-hmm. Building a garden is not a cheap thing to do. And you need a different kind of garden at different stages in your life. So for any young family, that first step of sitting down and thinking, is this my forever home? If it is to be that, and you think it's to be that, then you want to plan it very, very carefully. And that way you'll no waste money, and you'll no do things that you hit to undo. I see a lot of folk with gardens making silly mistakes in the first 2 or 3 years and spending a lot of money and then no getting the results they want and regretting it. I don't know, Richie, I mean, what would you say where a young family's been your biggest lesson since you got your garden?
Well, the big problem I've had is it's been a mature garden, so it's been in the house has been in the family for a long time. So there's lots of things like rose bushes, and there's a big jaggy berberis. So anything that's jaggy, the berberis and the roses are close to the kids, so I've got to really watch the thorns. So I'm always nipping off thorns when I see them and stuff like that. So to maybe start without that would be a great thing. And things that I'm putting in, I'm sort of almost thinking of the garden now as a place to go and, like you say, play and have fun. And then it's almost how to stage that, how to decorate it. So I've started by planting some creepers around the treehouse that I've built, you know, and I'm hoping I'm going to have a honeysuckle coming up one side and a jasmine up the other, and it'll be something nice and fragrant for the kids as well once that establishes. So things like that, you know, how to kind of intertwine what you're thinking of having. So, you know, it's not just about thinking about the planting, but thinking about the play area.
Can I just interrupt there, Richie, just for a bit? Can you tell folk just what the top of your treehouse is made of?
Oh, the top of the treehouse? It's made of unicorn fabric.
Yes.
So I upcycled an old bed that I had in the garage, and I've sort of sawn it in half, kind of a big hole in it, and I've put a big chute down it, which comes into where I had all sorts of kind of shrubs down there. And what I've done is I've lifted a few, and then I've made a kind of wooden border, and I've backfilled it all with bark, so there's a soft landing zone for them. And then that's sort of next to my crabapple tree, and under the crabapple tree I've sort of incorporated a swing. So and I've put an A-frame in to stabilise that, the branch that I've hung it on. So thinking about how to adapt the garden to the kids and how the kids can adapt to the garden, you know.
On behalf of Bex and Pete, what would you plant immediately, Dave?
Well, I think what I would say to Bex and Pete, you know, it's August now, it's getting late. I would just have maybe, if for this year, if they want to put a few pots and tubs and things like that in, fine. Or they might want to think about maybe building a raised bed and, you know, doing some, it's even getting late for annuals, but they could do a raised bed and put some nice bulbs in it. But I would take between now and the end of this year and into March to really think about, are they going to have a children's zone, an adult zone, grass for kicking the ball about, whatever. Just lay it out into different areas and then make a wee plan as to what they want to do, what they want to tackle first. Now, that might be the play area for the children, but thinking about that, if that's in the sun now, then that might be, if it's to be their ever home, 3 or 4 years, you know, 10, 15 years' time, that might be where a summer house goes. But you could build a playhouse in it now for the bairns that could be adapted into a summer house later. It's taking that longer view. That's what I would encourage them to do if it's going to be their longer home. And, you know, if they're going to have beds, oh yeah, a fella Inch gied me an over good bit of advice, and it was to watch the space, even if it had nothing in it for a year, and just look at where the sun goes, and think, and then think about the time of day that you use the garden, or you're likely to use it, so that you make sure you put the patio in the right place, so it gets the sun for the maximum period in the year.
Good advice, Dave.
At the time of day you're going to use it. So just taking time to understand the space, and no rushing at it, and thinking about their budget. Take this, the rest of this autumn and into the winter to do a bit of planning, save a bit of money because it's nae cheap, and then they can hit the ground running, you know, February, March, with any digging a small new border, raised beds, whatever. But take it in stages. Don't be rushing at it.
Right. Thanks, Dave. And thanks to Beck and Pete. Enjoy your garden and tack time, as Davey said. New. Speaking about talking time, since we are at the start of the hearst season, the garden is beginning to provide loads of food and tasty delights. And when Beck and Pete get to this stage, they'll love this stage. And I can say, hand on heart, that each ane of the team are big food fans. We like our food. Would I be correct in assuming that, gentlemen? A fair assumption?
That's a fair assumption.
David, do you like your food? Oh, Andrew likes his food.
I'm working on my doctor's new mantra, eat less, day mayor, but I'm nae aye paying attention.
And we mak jam, if I get time. Richie is a renowned jam maker, and will tell the nation, reveal his true credentials. His apple gilly is legendary. I'm nae kidding.
I mentioned that crab apple tea, didn't I?
Scotch Radio, wait.
Going to have a good crop this year, I'm hoping.
Didn't I say that too early? Because remember, in Scotch Radio, we had a Christmas competition, and Fahy has the best apple gilly. In a year, we had to hear a steward's inquiry because it was fooshed on the winning jar top. He was disqualified. He's never.
Fahy had fooshed on their gilly.
It may have been me.
Oh, dear.
I think it was Steve Byrne. Was it not Steve Byrne, Richie?
He went, add on. What's this?
I think he was not pleased. He didn't get the prize. Okay, so I thought it's time we entered the kitchen and introduce you to some of our cooks starting up. We're going to start up in Murrayshire, in the kitchen of Helen Fitch. Now, Helen's husband, Peter, is a superb gardener. And Helen is just one of the best cooks I've come across over the years. And she just happens to be my cousin. I'll just say that in the passing. But I'm half a prude of Helen. So Fitz cousin Helen, making the new. And a lot of folk are telling me that they're liable to hear a lot of green tomatoes this year. So apart from making them into chutney, what else can be done with them? Helen has the answer.
Well, everybody says green tomato chutney. And it's all right, but I didn't want gallons of this stuff. And years ago, my husband and I were living and working in Malawi. And we grew tomatoes there. And I had green tomatoes. And I read somewhere that you can stew them with a bit of sugar. And they're just like apples. Well, they're not just like apples. They're like a different kind of fruit altogether. But you can stew them. You can make crumbles with them. They need a bit of sugar. But it's just something different.
It's an awful lot better than just chutney all the time, isn't it?
Well, you need an awful lot of cheese to get through an awful lot of chutney.
That's true. I think we're going to hear enough of what a cheese on a why, because much tomatoes are okay, but I'm going to hear some greening, so I'll give your stewed tomatoes a try, Helen. Now, when I spoke to you yesterday, you were in your kitchen sorting out beetroot. So do you suggest would be a good dish to add beetroot to the table?
Well, there's our kinds of whys. One of the best ones I've ever had is that I got to be a friend who's half Romanian, half Italian. You cook it, you boil it, you peel it, you grate it. You put butter in a pan and you put in your grated beetroot and it soaks up the butter. And you can keep adding the butter. Now, this is not a good, healthy recipe. This is a once-in-a-year recipe. And when it's soaked up out of the butter, you season it, you put some garlic in it, and a wee dash of vinegar, and then some cream. And it is absolutely heavenly.
So you would have that as a side dish or something like that?
A side dish. Or you could make, yesterday I sliced mine thinly, raw beetroot sliced thinly, and made a carpaccio with it. And you just put a dressing on it and some shaved parmesan and some basil. And that's fine. It's crunchy because it's raw. Or you can grate it and put it in with some toasted hazelnuts. And what else did I put in? Oh, crumbled some feta and some cooked lentils. The brunines, nay, the orangines for lentil soup. And stirred it all through. And I make a salad dressing. I make raspberry vinegar with some raspberries, and that's really good for making a salad dressing way. So, you know, there's other things out there. And the day we're hearing them, just cooked, then quartered, and along with some, with an awful lot of cauliflower. I've got 7 in my fridge.
Bumper crop.
Well, they all come at the same time. So what I'll be doing with that is the cooked beetroot, some quartered courgettes steamed, so they're just cooked. The cauliflower and florets just cooked. And then make an anchovy dressing to dip them in. And that's really good.
Oh, no. You mentioned raspberries. I've made some raspberry jam. I'm nae as good a cook as you, but raspberry jam I can attempt. And mainly for the wild raspberries out in the garden. Now, what are you doing with the raspberries to make the raspberry vinegar?
Right. You can do it with frozen rasps or fresh rasps. So if you haven't time to do it, freeze them and do it later. Put them in a stainless steel bowl. Cover them with cider vinegar and leave them for a week. Cider vinegar is better. If you use malt vinegar, it's kind of harsh. So you strain them and then, depending on how sweet you want it or unsweet, you either bottle it as it is because the vinegar does preserve it, or you put in some sugar or honey. Bring it to a boil just and then bottle it and it'll keep. And with that, it makes a fine drink with some hot water added. It'll fairly clear a host in the winter. And it'll clear your sinuses as well as a hot drink if you've got the gall. But I use a lot of it for salad dressing. And it's that with just a spoonful of Dijon mustard and some rapeseed oil. And I get a good shack in a jar and it emulsifies and it's makes a nice, different salad dressing.
I like the sound of that, Helen. I really like. I could speak to you all day, but maybe in the next time I'll be up with you in your own garden and we need to catch you up on your way. Now, one last question. Well, it's not my last question, but I saw a photo of a dish you'd made with ripe figs for your garden. What was that recipe? What did you do with the ripe figs?
Well, you've got your fig for the greenhouse. In fact, he brought in the last of them this morning. You split it in half. You wrap it up in pancetta with a wee bit of maybe feta cheese tucked into it and a quick flash in the oven to melt the cheese and heat it through. Or you can eat that cold, just on, you know, without cooking it. I like it both ways. It just depends on what you're feeling like on the day. But they're good that way. Or just, if you've got them in the greenhouse, just eat them. They're much better. They're much better eaten like that than a syrup of figs. I can guarantee that.
Oh, it sounds good on your recipe. I love that footy. Now, here is the last question, right? Nothing to do with we're speaking about food-wise. You have a wormery. Does it work?
It does work. And it's quite near the house. And it gets some of the organic kitchen waste that goes into that. And the worms, they're doing fine. They're having a good year this year. The other year they weren't so good. I don't know what went wrong with them, but this year they're working fine. And then our garden, the main vegetable garden, is off a sandy. And you've just a wee bit of soil and sand underneath. So it really needs the worms to get the things working right. And so the worms go down there when they've been brought through the nursery tub, as they say, and they're growing fine. Then we put them down in the garden and pray the blackbirds aren't too hungry.
And it works?
Aye. We feed the compost and worms. We, as I say, garden stuff and kitchen stuff. I think they quite like tea bags, shacking out a bit sometimes. You know, you take the baggie off and put the leaves in. Near our money, or they'd get a bit of, maybe they might get hyper on the tea leaves. It's got caffeine, hasn't it?
Hyper on the tea, the caffeine, right. Helen, it's been an absolute pleasure speaking to you. And as I said, I'm looking forward to getting up and seeing your garden in person. As I said, we need to catch you up, family-wise and everything else-wise. Put the world to rights as usual. And thank you for joining us. Will you come back again and keep us right?
Oh, aye, it's fine hearing our news.
Okay, speak soon.
Aye.
Helen Fitch, and a big, big thank you to Helen for letting us into her kitchen. Helen is just a star cook, and hopefully I'll be able to cry and buy their gear in the not too distant future. Dave, Richie, Andrew, fit you mark of that then. Dave first.
I'm allowed to make raspberry vinegar.
Same, aye. I've got all the ingredients for me and I've bought it yesterday.
I kind of have done this. I'd forgotten about that. It's grand stuff.
Aye, if you have piochers in the winter time, that's the very stuff for you. Andrew, are you a cook? Do you mark on thing?
I love cooking. The problem is, though, I've said before, because I live in a city centre flat, I don't have a garden. But I was up in a broch last week for the first time after the lockdown, and my mum, she's got a raised bed, and she said, come out and have a look at fit I've been growing. So I went out, and along the back, she's like, I've got green beans, but they've been eaten by the snails, so there's none of them on there. Because mine in the first episode, we were speaking about snails, and Dave said, just chuck them over the wah.
Aye.
No, he didn't.
I say to you, if you didn't chuck them out of the wah, because they come back.
Aye. Well, she's just been chucking them out of the wah, because it's like, we live just right to the shoreline, so it's like basically hurling them out of the shore. So, aye. But one day she threw 127 of them. Just in a morning. So they ate the green beans, so there was none of them. And she said, I've got some beetroot. So she hooked it up, and up was not ready. But I wasn't too bothered about that, because I don't really like beetroot. Although Fit Helen was marking there, that sounded fine.
That sounded fine, yeah.
And then she said, I've got some carrots, hooked them up. They weren't ready either, so didn't get on a thing. I got some strawberries, though, they were fine. Aye, which was just as well, because last year, the dog ate them. He got a little taste for the strawberries, and he was just eyeing the raised bed eating them. So,
sometimes I'm feared to ask Andrew things. So you never actually got to cook anything.
Maybe they are. I'll get some of you eventually, maybe.
Yeah, eventually. But fit your main dish. What do you like making?
Oh, anything. I like experimenting and cooking different things. I just like taking the time. I find it enjoyable. Because some folk just can't be bothered cooking or whatever, but I actually enjoy it. So I like to research things and take time to mark things.
Well, I would have liked to be good, but I've sat in Richie's kitchen off and he's made my supper. He's a good cook, and as I said, he marks a lot of jam and
I get by.
Okay, listen, we need another warm fact. Dave, are you ready with another one?
Another warm fact? Well, he kind of have no legs and have no feet. They move with wee hairs that are on the side of their body called setae. There are several on each of the worm's segments, and these wee hairs grip the soil, and then it just pulls its body forward and pulls its body forward with the wee hairs. So they've nae feet, and they've nae legs, and they've nae een, and nae lugs, and nae brains, and yet we all love them, pair wee wriggly things.
Really well. Bairns love them.
But they're awfully important, you can.
Aye. We'll go into that in the wee minty. But just a reminder that you can get in contact with us here. Andrew has made it easy for you to record your question. Andrew, just very briefly explain the system again.
Just as we said earlier, just head to growradio.com. There's a button there. Push that. You can just spec your question and then it gets sent directly to us, or send us an email at info@growradio.com.
Okay, and just a reminder, you're with us, I'm Frieda Morrison, there's Dave Mitchell, Andrew Davison, and in our soon quarters, there is Richard Werner.
Aye.
Now then, back to our email questions. This is Ian for Andrew Anderson for Glasgow. Andrew has trouble with Mayor's tail, Dave. Oh, Mayor's tail.
Oh, no.
Tried many things, get rid of it. Can we suggest?
No. Well, Mayor's tail is an awful fascinating thing. You can, there's mere different species of Mayor's tail in Britain and Ireland. The greatest concentration is pretty much in the British Isles. It's fun all around the world, but there's a lot of diversity here in the UK. And it's interesting too, because again, Mayor's tail's been around for about 200 million years, and some of its even older relatives evolved before that. So it's awful persistent. It survives everything. I think there was even evidence that it survived the bomb in Hiroshima, terrible as that was, but the Mayor's tail actually survived that and was one of the first things to come back to life. It's got silica on the outside of its stem, which means it's very resistant to weed killers. And it's very, very difficult to control, even when there were a wide range of herbicides on the market that did have an effect on it. They've all been taken off the market now. Cleaning the area manually, leaving the area to go fallow, the use of mats are all things that you can do. It was a bit of a, when I used to do a lot of the gardener's question panels and we got this question, quite often we just used to look at the bare person that had the thing and say, I tell you, you didn't kind of get a state agent, do you? Because I'll be away hearing a word with him and no telling anybody you've got it.
Oh dear. Okay.
Well, it's difficult to control.
Okay.
Very, very difficult. Especially if it's in a herbaceous border and it's through shrubs. Really, if you've got it, you've got to let the ground go fallow. It's very difficult.
Right. Moving on to a feature this episode, whims or worms. We used to be sent to different places when I was working with the BBC in Scotland. We had pronunciation classes. And two words I couldn't get right was squirrels. It came out squirrels. And the other word was whims. I couldn't say whims. It came out worms. So I'm going to say whims and worms at the same time, just to please Abdi. Right. Now, the august Charles Darwin devoted the last years of his life to the meticulous study of one animal, the earthworm. He said, it may be doubted whether there are many other animals which played so important a part in the history of the world as have these lovely organised creatures. Charles Darwin. Now, as we ken very little about life under our feet, or if it happens under the bit of land that we stand on our gardens, I turn to David Mitchell for more information. Dave, over to you.
Well, it's right. Darwin published his book, The Formation of Vegetable Mould Through the Action of Worms, in 1881. And it's sold over 6,000 copies in the first year. It's still in print today, but it's a wee bit difficult to access, to the modern reader because of its use of language. And Stuart's book, The Earth Moved, is great at preserving the essence of Darwin's book. But when you asked me about this first, I was a way back to look at another book that I had when I was a student, The World of the Soil, and an alien called Modern Biology. And, it was just grand. There was another wee quote of fun for Darwin, and it says, the plough is one of the most ancient and most valuable of man's inventions. But long before he existed, the land was in fact regularly ploughed and still continues to be ploughed by earthworms. And this is indeed true. Earthworms, the fossil evidence for them suggests, from fossilized burrows and fossilized egg cocoons, suggests that they first evolved around about the same time as the mare's tail, 300 million years ago. And, they occurred in both the northern hemisphere and the southern hemisphere just about the time that the supercontinent Pangaea broke up.
Mm-hmm.
And today, they're found in every continent in the world, apart from Antarctica. And there's about 3,000 different kinds of earthworms that have been identified for science. And the biggest one is called the giant Gippsland earthworm. It bides in Victoria in Australia.
Is it a worm? It's a snake.
You could think that because it's about 2 centimetres in diameter, and it can be anything up to 9 feet in length and weigh as much as 14 ounces. That's nearly a pound.
Try putting that into Helen's wormery, eh?
But the average yens are about a metre and weigh a couple of 100 grams. Oh. Now, as we've said earlier, they've no skeleton. Oh. Their body's divided into segments, and their digestive tract just runs like a tube from yin end to the tether. And they've no jaws, they've no teeth, they just suck their food straight through their moo. It goes right in, and it goes right through their body, moving through their body.
So does it go out the bottom then?
Aye, it comes in yin end and out the tether.
So they've got a bottom, an actual bottom, or a dout?
Aye, right at the tip of the far end of them. And, their movements are controlled. They've a wee brain, a tiny wee brain that's divided into two parts. And we talked about them no being able to hear. But they hear through their body, their nervous system, through their skin. But they've no heart. They don't have a heart like we do with four valves. They've got five specialised arches that pump the blood. They're called aortic arches that pump the blood as their body moves and contracts.
You think there's this legend that they cut a worm in half, it grows again. Can you cut a worm in half and does it survive?
No. Oh. And you shouldn't do that. You get the going in a day that badge for that.
Just
that's just no
I didn't cut
words
in half. I didn't cut words.
No, you shouldn't cut words
I'm
in half.
I'm saying I didn't
cut
words in half. Okay.
Again, bairns love worms, but your youngins out there that's listening, didn't you be cutting them in half? Have a look at them and put them back in the ground.
Okay, what about their diet? Can you move on to their diet? I'm trying to work out what
they
eat.
Well, they eat soil and dung and leaf litter and wee other bits of organic material that move through their body, and it just moves straight through that digestive tube, and as it scoots out the other end, that's what Darwin referred to as the vegetable mould, and it's that that releases more nutrients into the soil and enables bacteria and fungi to decompose it even more and keep the soil healthy, you know. And they're queer like things. Each worm is both male and female. It's what they call hermaphrodite. But you need two different worms to mate. They've no specific breeding season. And they lay their eggs in a wee cocoon. And the wee baby worms are born whole. They're born live. They emerge probably after about 3 or 4 weeks.
Back a wee bit there. They're both male and female. But so they need a chummy to mate.
They need a chum.
To mate.
They need a chum.
To breed. But they didn't breed with each other. They breed individually. So they said, you fancy just having a wee breedy party so we can both chummy each other and
two of them meet and it just happens and they get on with it and they date in the dark. They're off a modest, you can. Leave them be.
Okay, another question. Why do worms come to the top, the soil, when it rains?
Well, worms will come to the surface because their burrows fill with water and that'll push them up to the top of the air so they can breathe.
Oh, never thought that.
Fair.
So that's why birdies and seagulls in particular do little dances.
Well, you get that. They also clean their burrows up, and some types of worms come to the surface to pull food down into their burrows so they can digest it. Because here in the UK, there are about 26 different native earthworms in 12 genera. But they're divided into three main groups, what we call epigeic worms, that live on the surface. And they generally don't make burrows, and they just help decompose leaf litter and everything. And they don't burrow. And that's things like the red worm and the red wriggler and the wee tree worm. They live on the surface all the time.
Okay, now I'm going to go into worm casts, because they're the ones that kind of, well, are the worms. But how many worm casts would you say would be in an acre or a grand? Give us an idea just how busy they are from the new breeding.
Well, that vegetable mould that worms produce, it's been estimated by the likes of Charles Darwin and other researchers since that a healthy population of worms will produce about 10 tonnes of cast per acre per annum.
Wow!
But a very healthy population could produce as much as 18 tonnes. So that's, if you take an acre of grun with a healthy population of worms, you could basically fill a 20-ton lorry with the amount of cast that they produce in a year.
That's amazing.
That's a lot of tunneling and burrowing and digging.
Right, you can see the value. But can I finish off this session, because I'm sure we'll get a lot more questions about worms later on. How do we identify the worms in your garden?
Well, if you want to identify and learn more about worms, there's a fantastic website. There's a society, the Earth Worm Society of Great Britain.
Gotcha.
And they've got their own website, www.earthwormsoc.org.uk. And it's got amazing information about biology, life cycle, ecology, and how, as well as how to identify them. There's even a way that you can record the number of worms. And there's even quizzes and blogs, including stuff on compost and all sorts of things. But you can, my most exciting fact, Frieda, there can be as many as 3 million worms in an acre of grun.
Wow. 3 million worms.
3 million worms in an acre of grun. And their total weight, in many cases, will be bigger than the number of animals that are grazing on it.
That is incredible. Right, Dave, I'm going to leave it there because I want to speak to Andrew and Richie privately, because I know it has come to my notice that you have been moved, as well as the Earth, you have been moved to be a creative person, as I know we are, and you have entered the muse by writing a poem, Ode to Worms. Richie, Andrew,
aye.
should we ask Dave to read his poem to the nation at the end of this programme, The Ode to Worms?
Absolutely.
Absolutely.
Sounds great.
Richie,
I'd be glad to hear that.
Yes, okay.
Yes, please. Oh, aye.
Sounds good. He's written an ode to worms. I think that is fantastic. He has been smitten
by the
news.
I tried to find you and I couldn't, so I just...
You wrote it? You just
I
wrote
it? It.
Okay. We are marketing the moment well, so that folk can say, right, we want to hear this ode to worms.
Just before we leave them totally, can we leave the last word to Aristotle?
Okay.
Because he said worms are the intestines of the earth.
I like that.
And how true is that, you know? We should respect them just as much as we respect the bees.
Well done, David. Thank you for that. And that book we refer to is CAD, The Earth Moved, and On the Remarkable Achievements of Earthworms by Amy Stewart, published by Francis Lincoln. It's a cracker. And I'm proud to say it's been in my bookshelf for a long time, in my favourite books. Okay, moving on to worms, but we will refer to the Ode to Worms nearer hand the end of the programme. We look forward to that moment. Back to the questions. We've time for another couple before we close the shed door. Question 5. Audio question again. This is for Judy Beasley from Atlanta, Georgia, about clematis.
Can you recommend one or two autumn blooming clematis or clematis that can withstand the American South's heat and humidity? Thank you.
We're gardening the earth again, David. You like these sort of questions? Okay.
It's interesting. Atlanta, Georgia's in what they call the USDA hardiness zone 8A, which is not that dissimilar to much of the British Isles. And, you know, the sort of top tips I would say, don't plant too deep. In the heavy clay soil, they don't like that. You know, they need to be well drained and the crown should be above the ground. And another wee tip is that they like their roots to be in the shade. And if you can't get them in the shade, the use of a big flat stone or a slab will help to keep the roots cool. Now, there are quite a few varieties that you could use, common things like Nelly Moser or Comtesse de Bouchard or Elsa Spath. You know, flowering in June to October, things like Henry Eye, Etoile Violette, Etoile Rose, Hermes Markham, Princess Diana, flower a wee bit later, June to September. And I'm always quite keen to try and look at what grows native near you. And it's not quite in the same neck of the woods, but it's not that far away. Clematis texensis, which was first introduced in 1868 to the UK. And some of these hybrids that I've mentioned have actually been bred out of texensis. So, you know, there's a few there. I think if I had to choose one, I think I'd probably choose Hermes Markham, and I'd probably choose Duchess of Albany would be my second choice, I think, although Etoile Rose is another bonny thing. You know, and there's plenty of nurseries in the States, Joy Creek in Oregon, Brushwood, and there's another one in South Carolina called Woodlanders. But it's just grand to get these questions from the other side of the world.
Isn't it lovely, right?
I fair love that, man. It's great. We're all gairdners together, no matter where we bide.
Great gairdning the earth. Thanks, Judy, for that, and please keep in contact. Okay, final email for Jane in Edinburgh. Fan's the best time to cut cuttings for a laurel bush. And fan, we're at it. Fan's the best time to plant rose hips. And they will squash them first in the pot, or if we put them in a pot. Just give that kind of general idea, fit to D.
Well, she said the propagation of laurel, there's two laurels, Prunus lusitanica. If it's that in, you're better doing it for softwood or semi-ripe cuttings. If it's a cherry laurel, Prunus lauricerasus, the big one with the thick leathery leaves, then I would personally probably do that from semi-ripe wood cuttings, but you could also do hardwood cuttings in the late autumn, early winter.
Stop a wee minty there. Hardwood cuttings, semi-ripe cuttings, fit are they?
Well, semi-ripe cuttings are taken in the late summer, early autumn, and there's four different types, those taken with a heel and those that are basal, and then what we call mallet cuttings, and you can even cut them across straight at the node, but I usually take them with a heel. So semi-ripe cuttings with a heel, late summer, early autumn. Hardwood cuttings are taken late autumn, right into the winter. And they're done in a different way. You've actually got a section of wood that's about 6 inches to a foot long with a buds at the top, and you cut them and you can do them in a pot, or you can, if you're doing a load of them, we used to do them in a trench outside. But at home, you're better doing them in a pot, sort of 50-50, gritty medium and a wee bit of leaf bowl.
Would you put them outside in the pot?
Oh, aye, outside in the cold, aye.
Right, what about the rose hips? Are they in a pot as well?
Well, the rose hips, you want to cut the little hips off, and remember that they can take a long time to ripen. Just because they're red, that doesn't mean, if say they're ripe, they need to be squishy and soft. Expose the seeds, put them in, I used to put them in a cup which had water and a teaspoon of bleach in it, and I'd let them sit in that for about 20 minutes, and then I'd strain them out through a bit of cheesecloth with clean water, and then I'd put them in a wee plastic box or a sealable bag with a wee bit of damp compost and some sand, and I'd keep them in a really cold place for about 45 to 60 days. If you live somewhere where you didn't get cold weather, put them in the fridge, and then sow them after about 45, 60 days, just as you would normally. And that process is called stratification, and it breaks the seed dormancy, and it will get them to grow.
Okay, obvious question. But why do you put bleach in amongst them?
Just to keep them, it's to sterilise any wee bugs and beasties before you put them away, to put them in the fridge, so they don't rot when they're in the bag.
Richie, Andrew, never heard that in before.
That's a top tip.
That's it for this episode, and my thanks going out to Abdi that sent in their questions, and to the team for did a great job escorting us through the virtual sheds, and the formidable force that is David Mitchell for allowing us to hear the wisdom of the worms. That's awesome. The worms.
I fair enjoyed doing that, Frida. It took me back to when I was a student. I remembered things I'd forgotten, and I found out things I never knew. And I'll never tuck them for granted again.
I know. I think it's just opened our logs that we have. We're lucky to hay logs to the worms. And here's to the beasties, right, and bugs in your garden. And, of course, the wiggly worms knew that we can fit their up to. Now, we didn't ken if we would have time, but Dave has been creating in his shed. He has been in communication with the muse. The muse came out of him. Okay, Dave. Your ode to the wiggly worms, on yourself.
Och, you want the ode to the worm. Now dinna poke the worms, just cos they wriggle. The pair wee things are nae there to mock ye giggle. Mine, their aye working awa' doon a blow, munching and chomping a' the time, girding the earth and tenning it weel, improving the soil like a hard-working chiel. So a body can plant and sow and get stuff to grow with ease. including flowers and muckle veg. Hey, mind of that, as ye sit down to scoff your tatties mincing peas.
David Mitchell is a poet. David Mitchell, thank you very, very much for that. We will never forget your ode to worms. Fiddy mug of that, Richie. Andrew,
hey. That was very good, huh?
We have been challenged. So, for the team, Richie Werner, Andrew Davidson, David Mitchell, and myself, Frieda Morrison, enjoy your garden.